Hi, this is Tracy with Spiritual Not Religious, and today my guest is Logan Worthley. Logan is a pretty amazing young woman. I'm excited to have her on the show. She, just to give you a little bit of background on cool stuff that she's done, she actually started college at 16, so she's 19 now, and she's ranked 9th in the U.S. in debate, and actually a two-time winner of the Steve Hunter Classic, which is a debate tournament. She's just really intelligent. I'm an intelligent person myself, I fancy, but I'm also aware that there's a lot of people who are a lot more intelligent than I am. and she's just really smart and really cool. To have a very intelligent person who has also read my book. So she's read my book and she's actually got some questions. So today we're going to start with that. And just, she's going to ask me a few questions about some things in my book. And then we're just going to talk about all the stuff. So Logan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. All right, so I've got about 7 questions and then some different references to some things that went on in the book.
Sounds like a debate person.
Oh, yeah, you know me.
She has stats. References.
Always, would you expect anything less?
No, I would not, actually.
All right, so on page 50, you state, I'm telling you, this is how I do things.
For the love of all that's holy. Okay, go ahead.
On page 50, you state that you have a gift, and no one has a gift that they didn't ask for. So my question for you is, do you remember asking for yours?
That is such a good question, and no. I'd say that that's a philosophical position that I take. And when I say ask for, I guess what I also mean is that one has made the efforts in some time, whether it's in this current life or whatever a past life might, whatever that concept might mean, that in some way they sort of developed the skills. And sometimes I think we show up into this lifetime with a lot of accumulated skills or experiences from past whatever. That's a whole nother can of worms, because I think the concept of time is, I don't even want to, I'm always thinking I want to get into that discussion at some point. You're talking about the kind of, that since time is an illusion, what does it even mean to say there is a quote past life?
Yeah.
Nevertheless, there is definitely accumulated knowledge that different people come in with. So when I say asked for, I don't necessarily mean consciously say I want this thing, but rather in some way or another developing the merit, is what some form of Buddhism would call it, to have certain kinds of skills.
Okay, well, perfect. That kind of leads me to my next question, actually. So you talked a lot about like multiple lives, and I was just going to ask you, do you believe in multiple lives, and like what does that look like for you specifically in your own personal belief system?
Okay, great. So this is great, because this is, like I've been saying, this is something I've been kind of wanting to explore. First of all, as disappointing as this answer is to many people, I do not know for sure. I've discovered over the course of my work, like teaching and things like that, that when I say there are things I do not know, but I have, you know, I have theories where I don't know. Some people are very disappointed by that because they want a guru, and I'm not.
Concrete answers are easier to cope with than vague ones.
Yeah.
Makes sense why that would be not as satisfying for people.
Yeah. But I think there's a lot of people who have concrete answers to things, but that doesn't mean they're right.
Yeah,
that's true. But this is my theory. This is my book, my concept about that is that if time is simultaneous and we do have a perception in this dimension of past, present, and future, then that same, from a dimensional perspective, we also then would have past lives. But it may be that those lives are more like simultaneous, that because we are multidimensional beings and that this ego identity that we walk around with in this dimension is not all that we are, it also makes sense that the totality of all that we are in what we call past, present, and future might coexist.
It makes a lot of sense. I like that theory. Moving forward, this is how I go.
Nice. Nice. Yes. How am I doing? Am I getting any
points? Oh, it's been wonderful. So many points.
Oh, good.
Thank maximum speaker points.
Awesome. Speaker points. Are you counting how many times I say
I am not. Should I?
I don't know. Somebody. Okay, I've got our tech guy here. who's my producer. Nate, who's my producer. So you guys that have been, anybody who's listened to more than one of my podcasts, you know this is like a big step up for me. I now have a producer. Say hi, producer.
I'm keeping tally of all the ums.
There you go. Okay. So we'll have a tally ready on the show.
Yay! Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No problem. So this is one that didn't directly relate to the book, but it's a question I had for you. Have you found any specified trends in people of different types of gifts?
Specified trends?
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Sure, no problem. So people obviously develop differently, and with that, there are different things that can develop out of it. Have you found that certain people are more able to develop very different, very specific types of gifts than other types?
Yeah, definitely. There's people who are natural mediums. There are people who are more like psychopomps.
What is that word?
A psychopomp is a person who helps people to, helps guide people into the afterlife.
Mm.
And it's a classically in the shamanic tradition, but the idea of shamanic tradition, that's kind of a controversial term too, because actually that term comes from a very specific, I think, Inuit, or I'm not sure, or maybe, indigenous Russian, or I don't know. It's a very specific thing, but we use it more generally now. But the idea of being able to interact between dimensions, I think, is how people use it now. But the actual term is psychopomp, which I don't love that word, but I love knowing it.
And you have like psycho killer, and that's where my brain went.
Say, yeah,
exactly.
That's just a friend of mine who has a lot of shamanic gifts taught me that word, because she said, prefers to use the correct word because she's very correct about that sort of thing. But so there's that. Some people have a lot of different gifts, but some people do kind of fall under certain categories in the same way that some people are musical and some people are intellectual and some people are really good at math, and so there are going to be tendencies, I think, sure. But some people are good at a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. All right. So in your book, you talk a bit about some different spiritual experiences that you had. What was the most profound spiritual experience for you? Mm-hmm.
My biggest, in terms of like an instant, like a thing that was distilled and instant, like not instant, but I've had a lot of experiences that are a long story, but, and every experience is part of the context of a long story, but I'd say there's two main ones that were visionary experiences, that changed the trajectory of my life significantly. The first one, which I, and I allude to these in the book, like I say, oh, that's for a different book.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. So, and I don't talk about them as much because they have a certain tenderness to them. And so there's this also, there's one of them would be at risk of being perceived as braggy. So I don't really like to tell the details of
one
of them.
We're past that here.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. And then the other one is, all right. So I'll go ahead and tell the one that was what I call part of my big second opening, mm-hmm. Which was really the first really real big opening where I had another level of awareness. And I experienced in my late teens, early 20s, a lot of, devoutly studying early 20th century existentialism.
Okay.
And of course that ultimately, if you really dig in deep enough, sorry dudes, but it ends up in nihilism. And so I kind of ended up in nihilism, although I wouldn't have called it that at the time. That contributed to a general sort of depressive state and a lot of suicidality. Mm-hmm. I was at a certain point in my journey, and I was, I'm not the kind of person, I felt like if I was going to do away with myself, I was going to do it, like, that night, like, that was it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be a hypocrite or whatever. I mean, I was like, you know, I mean, I don't know, but
you were
it was
late teens, early 20s. You didn't want to be a hypocrite.
Right. This particular event, was right before I turned 21, was like, I had a vision, in the middle of the night. I didn't sleep at all that night because I was, you know, it might be something akin to what some people like to call the dark night of the soul. I have complicated opinions about that idea, but it might have very well been that. But I had a vision, and one aspect of the vision, one very significant aspect of the vision, was that I was shown how karma works. And I didn't before that even, you know, I mean, if you're a nihilist, you can't believe in anything like that. But I was shown how karma works, and I was shown that if I did away with myself, that not only would it not improve my situation, but that I would actually come back with not only my current problems, but all of the problems that resulted from having not taken care of what I needed to take care of in this life. So all of the residual, I could see how that you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
And that it's not like a punishment. It's just that there's certain aspects of things that you have to get done. And if you don't, there are consequences to that.
It's the balance.
Yeah. And so, that experience was so real and profound that I couldn't then dismiss it, because it was a subjective truth that was undeniable. And so after that, you'd think, yay, the world has meaning, hurrah.
It's not that easy.
No, it wasn't that easy. In fact, it was, I just came out of that experience a little bit more like, oh crap, now I have to get my stuff together. I don't have any way out of this. I don't have an excuse. It's not gonna be, there's no way out of this. Mm-hmm. Now, a bunch of stuff happened after that. It was like my whole life just kind of cracked open. And while on the one hand, I began to be able to see energy at a whole nother level than I ever had before, even though I had that experience before, I could now see it on a whole nother level. And I was in a nonstop synchronicity vortex where everything was like a weird, surreal, magical dream in a lot of ways. And also, but at the same time, my health just collapsed. I started gaining weight. I developed boils and acne all over that I could not get rid of. And I was starting to lose vision in one of my eyes. I was losing, I was starting to develop a limp because it was just horrible. So, but at the same time, I was having the ability to do energy work on a whole nother level. But it was like, but I was making myself very sick. So, because I was using the old skills that I had had prior to this opening, which were more like take in other people's distress.
Not sustainable.
Right. And because it was so, I journeyed on to find a way to clean that up. So I kind of I directly talk about some of that in the book, but then that exact vision and what that was, and the reason why I haven't disclosed that part of the vision is because I don't like to admit that how suicidal I was at that time, partly because of the stigma associated with it, but also, nope, just totally because of the stigma.
I mean, I think when addressing things that have that much stigma, though, it is important to be able to put yourself out there and be vulnerable, because it affects so many more people than we acknowledge. And there's a lot of people out there that do do go through those things, but because they feel so alone that no one's ever been at that point that they're at, and they only hear about the stories that end in suicide, they don't hear about the ones that come out of it the other side and have these amazing, profound spiritual experiences. It's important to be able to vocalize those things to actually erase that stigma.
I hope so. It's just, it's ironically, and I'm sure if I was in any kind of business, I would probably feel that stigma. So, but ironically, in the world of mental health, as mm-hmm. a mental health practitioner, I have felt more worried about being open about my own struggles because there is, in among some people in the field, this sense of almost like
you should know better.
Mm-hmm. I guess, maybe. Yeah. I don't know, but it's just, but I think, you know, I do understand, you know, I never, when someone comes to me with suicidal ideation, I never ask them, you know, what happened? Because it's never about why, what happened. Like, a thing that happens to you is not what makes people do away with themselves. It just isn't. It's something else. And then circumstances can exacerbate it for sure. But yeah, when I finally came to terms with the fact that that was not a practical option and I was going to have to figure some crap out, you know, I've developed a cool life that I wouldn't want to miss. I mean, not to get, I don't want to get sentimental about it, honestly.
Get sentimental.
No, I don't think I want to. But I mean, like, the humans that I brought into the world,
yeah,
those particular humans are the most amazing humans. And I had something to do with that, and that's the biggest gift that I give to the world, for sure.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, when they're in that state, they don't have the ability to see past where they're at. They haven't reached within themselves enough, and that's not to say that they can't. It's just to say that they haven't taken the steps necessary to be able to see past the state that they're in and see all the different possibilities that could happen when you actually come out of that spot.
Yeah. So that was the one big vision. The other vision that I'm not going to tell the exact details of.
Sure, of course.
I'll just say that that vision was where I came back from that vision. Mm-hmm. And this was when I was about 28. That when I came back from that vision, and that was in terms of its opulence and amazingness, was the most amazing one.
Yeah.
It was just super amazing. And when I came back from that, it was like, okay, in order for me to accomplish that, how am I supposed to do that in this world?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided to go to grad school and become a counselor.
That's amazing.
So because I realized that in this particular world, that was probably going to be a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It has some downsides, I think, too, just internal to me, because I sometimes feel like some kind of conflict between my spirituality and my profession, which doesn't make any freaking sense. It shouldn't, and it really doesn't. And honestly, the clients that I work with a lot of times are struggling or journeying in their own spiritual discovery, and because of that, and because I have a very ecumenical sort of approach to it, I don't have a sense of that, you know, when people come with spiritual stuff, wherever they're at, if they are dug in on a particular religious perspective, mm-hmm. or if they're not, either way, I'm like 100% in, you know.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, the idea of disconnecting spirituality from personal growth is on its face aberrant, you know, or abhorrent,
yeah.
I think is the word I meant to
yeah.
say. I was going to say on the face of it absurd, but it's even worse than that.
It is. I think that personal development without spiritual growth, they negate each other. And to be able to reach an actual clear understanding of who you are as a person and what your place is in the world, you have to have both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then another way of looking at it is it's all spiritual growth. There's nothing that's not.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's not. I always talk about that in terms of like in the workplace, since we spend when a person has a job, they spend most of their waking hours at that job. And since if you buy the premise that there are no coincidences, then that means that that workplace is actually what you have set up to do your where a good amount of your personal growth. And the fact that jobs are a pain in the butt is even more evidence that that's where we do our spiritual growth, because spiritual growth is...
It happens in the tough times. It's not just in the spots where you have nothing to really look twice at.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. So moving forward a little bit, in your book, you talk about this fear demon.
In that vision. Mm-hmm. That was a cool vision.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so I've got a couple questions on that. So have you, how do I want to phrase this? Have you ever heard about things like spiritual pains, or in that sense, manifesting into physical marks?
Say it again.
So in that dream, he took you into his belly, right, and then spit you back up, and then all your fear was gone, right?
Yeah, he ate my fear.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. But in a sense where it's not quite so positive in the result, have you ever heard of spiritual pains or things happening in dreams manifesting into physical marks?
Yes. Yes, definitely. That does happen. There was a person who was, there's what I call unintentional psychics, and there's all kinds of unintentional psychics, and there's a phenomena of unintentional mediumship mm-hmm. that does happen. And there was a lady that was having a problem with ghosts in her house, and she was aware of it, but she didn't really believe in that sort of thing. But she woke up one day with a hand mark on her, right? And so a friend of mine showed me the picture, because she's a friend of the friend. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, okay, I could probably help her with that if she wants, right? So, because it's manifesting. So it's like not so good. So I went over and basically I helped her to understand that she was an unintentional medium. And I showed her where she had accidentally opened up a dimensional portal.
So fun.
I showed her where it was, and she goes, oh, that makes perfect sense because blah, blah, blah. You know,
yeah,
she
had, yeah, that's how it goes.
And I showed her where it was, and so I helped her to get the folks that were hanging out in there out, and close the portal, mm-hmm. and gave her a few tools. And I said, if you wanted to develop this, you totally could. But she was like, no. And that's fine. Yeah. It was what was funny. One of the things she said to me at the time was, she said, I don't want to mess with Ouija boards and things. And I said, neither do I. And she said, really? She just automatically assumed that I was going to be Ouija board.
We just all start doing crazy rituals immediately.
Way I told her about what I said about Ouija boards at the time, but I think it's a good analogy. I say, no, if you're having a party, you don't want to post it on Craigslist.
Oh, man.
Right? Basically, using a Ouija board is like, you know, posting your party on Craigslist. And yeah, no, you want to be very specific about what you do and don't mm-hmm. let it. But anyway, long story short, yes, people do have physical manifestations.
It's really interesting.
So let me ask you, why is that interesting to you?
I personally have dealt with that quite a few times mm-hmm. where I have some crazy dreams. My dad says I should start writing books just to sell in like the horror section. And there's been a couple times where I've woken up with bite marks of something biting me in my dream, and I wake up and I get that. Or if I'm shot in my dream, I'll wake up with a huge bruise in that spot the next morning. Or just some really crazy stuff like that. But more recently, I've been getting stuck, and it's a little bit crazy because I'm a lucid dreamer, so I'm always aware of what's going on. I can pretty much do whatever I want, but I also know that I'm dreaming and I can get out of it and wake myself up. But when I try to wake myself up, I get not in a dream state. I'm in wherever I am, but everything's dark, and usually there's something else in the room with me. And it's really, really crazy because it's not something that's really talked about that much. And so there's some hesitancy to talk about it, but it is something that I worry about because I mean, when you have physical things that are manifesting out the spiritual, it's a little creepy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't have much cultural context for those things, so it can feel like it's hard to make sense of it. So how do you make sense of it?
Can you be more specific?
What do you think is going on?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it has something to do with the idea that I am a lucid dreamer. I am fully aware. Like, I remember this one time in a dream. I knew everything was happening, but I knew that it was all fake. And I don't know why, but I decided that I had to keep going forward in the dream because if I went back, something bad would happen. And I was like, you know what? Let me just try it. And I fell back and I watched the entire picture just kind of morph into, like, almost like I was falling into a curtain.
Okay.
And so the way I make sense of it, I think it is because that I am more open to different forces that aren't visible the majority of the time, and it leaves me open to different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are different kinds of dream states.
Yeah.
And some of them are just the ego consciousness doing its healing job.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other dimensions that people can get into in when they are like from the dream state, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and there are levels of reality in those places. And, you know, we can sometimes have resistance to asking for assistance in those settings. But that is really the key, is to ask for some kind of assistance, even prior, like to set up a relationship with a part of whatever kind of guide that works for you, that mm-hmm. is meaningful to you.
That's usually how I get out of them.
Exactly. Yeah. So setting up a relationship with that kind of an entity, a cooperative relationship, because those beings won't ever, they have the best boundaries ever. They will not give assistance unless they're asked.
Yeah.
And then the downside of that is if you don't know to ask, or if you're tentative about asking, then for whatever reason, for some people, because they don't feel like it, they want to dismiss it as not real, and to ask for assistance would be admitting that it's real.
Yeah, I think I got lucky in a sense, because the first time it happened, I just had this like innate feeling that I had to ask for help, that I wouldn't be able to do it on my own. And so I think I kind of got lucky.
Yeah. Or you had that. Yeah. So that's great. And I think, so that's the thing. It's just like, I think those of us who are living, you know, and I'm, believe it or not, I mean, I think I'm a very rational mm-hmm. person. So, so there's a part of me that doesn't want to admit that.
Oh, of course. Of course. I'm a debate champion. You think I want to admit that like I'm having some crazy dream that I get stuck in the middle of? I like facts. And when I can't back things up with facts, it becomes confusing. But you also have to be rational enough to acknowledge the sensory experience is still real.
Mm-hmm. And so the positive side of mm-hmm. it, when we have those kinds of experiences, like, you know, you have like a physical manifestation of something, the positive side of that is that it makes it really hard to pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so that is the level of, so in a certain sense, you could almost see that as like in almost maybe semi-analogous mm-hmm. to that vision of the portal demon, you know, that was like that devoured my fear.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that shows up for a lot of people is that certain kinds of psychic gifts show up in the family tree, and that we can see, you know, other family members or other generations that had certain kinds of experiences. Do you have any of those kinds of experiences?
Yeah, I do. So for my family specifically, one a generation gets them. So I have it, my dad has it, and my dad's mother has it. And the level of strength of these gifts really depends on the person. For example,
everyone can say that my grandmother's a little witchy because you just get around her and you can tell that she knows things, you know, but she's also old and Italian. So that kind of just goes with the how it is. She's an amazing, amazing woman. But then there's my dad, who is absolutely brilliant. He's the type of person who's very much like myself with statistics and very level-headed. So most people wouldn't assume that of him. But he doesn't have a gift as strong as my grandmother does, but he definitely still gets reads off people. And then there's me. I have a lot stronger than my dad does, but me and my grandmother are pretty similar.
Do you think that women have it more? And I know I don't like gender generalities. I really don't. I think they're typically they don't pan out. And but do you think there is something to that?
No, I don't. That's not because we don't see it more in women, but more because of the way that society treats women. It allows women to be more accessible to their emotions. And so I think that if we actually open that up to men also, we'd be seeing the same types of results in men.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think also any group that is limited in the external world over the mm-hmm. centuries will also probably compensate with things that are not overtly accepted as strengths. I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking that might be a thing too. Kind of like, you know what I mean? Sort of like because men have for so many centuries been rewarded more for those out in the world things and women have not, it would also open, there's that side of it too. It's like, well, they have this other thing.
Yeah. And I think that if we also look at the way that time is spent among the genders, women, historically speaking, have had a lot more time to be able to develop their emotional sides. And when men are just put to work, you know, and this is what you do, and who you are is based off your merits, not who you are as a person or your character. And so I think that also has largely contributed to it.
So what do you feel like is the connection between emotion and these gifts?
I think, at least speaking personally, the people that I've met who are able to access these gifts generally feel a lot stronger than people who either haven't accessed them yet or completely look away from them. And that doesn't mean that people don't feel strongly. It's just when you're able to see a different perspective than one you thought was previously possible, you're forced to re-examine the way you see things and you have this whole other side that you can access.
That's true. And I think that's the thing. It's like if you have experiences that you so at least subjectively cannot deny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. I think that's for me. It's like I have a certain integrity in that I won't pretend things aren't true if they're true for me. Yeah. I will not deny that. And that's awkward. You know, that's an awkward position to take when it's counter to
popular belief.
Mm-hmm.
I agree completely with that. I think for myself, I didn't know it ran in my family until about a year ago because one of my parents made my other parent promise not to say anything. And so growing up, being able to see things or hear things that other people couldn't, I was made out to look like I was crazy. So that was my version of reasonable deniability. But then to have that sort of background of knowing, this actually does run the family. You're not hallucinating. You're not, you're not going crazy here. This is something that is real. This is something that is valid. And it doesn't mean that you're any less. It actually means that you're equal, you know? It was a really, really cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a microcosm of what happens in general,
yeah.
where I think a lot of people
exactly.
who, because they don't have a cultural context for certain kinds of symptoms, what we would call symptoms in
mm-hmm.
our business, they have to see it as a problem.
Exactly.
And people who likely, but then, you know, it's like, it's a balance, the two. And my philosophy about things is I always say it's only a problem if it's a problem.
Exactly. Exactly. Because when you're balancing spiritual experiences versus mental illness, some of those things that can be written off as symptoms are not those. They're actually an awakening, you know? And when we're prescribing medication after medication to dull these senses, it doesn't actually necessarily do more good than harm.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I think but by the same token, if someone really is truly suffering, if they
get help, of course, exactly. Of course get help. If it's a problem.
Even if it is a spiritual sickness, some kind of help. But I think acknowledging that from the, you know, acknowledging from the professional perspective to not immediately, like when I've been evaluating other people's assessments in psychology, in psychological exams or clinical exams, and they'll say, oh, well, they're hearing voices. I'm like, okay, well, what are the voices saying? How do they feel about the voices? I mean, it's not like you can't just automatically say, because sometimes I would get response that, well, they actually feel really comforted by the voices because the voices are telling them to keep going and to try. And I'm thinking, well,
then don't stop them.
At least don't, you know, keep an eye on it, make sure it doesn't become something problematic for them. But at the same time, don't just automatically, you know,
if it's a problem, find solutions. If it's not a problem, great.
Yeah. And so, yeah, exactly. So it's just, and also just as a sideline, I think sometimes when people are quote hearing voices, sometimes in some cases they're just having what I call really loud self-talk, but you know what I mean? There's like, yes. Right. But if in a culture that could find context for those kinds of things, the person wouldn't be in a state of suffering. They would be, you know, held. Mm-hmm. It would be, sense could be made of it in a meaningful way. And I think, you know, and that's what we don't have right now in the general society.
Yeah, because I think there's also this fear to be labeled as crazy or as, you're just this mental illness now, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, not necessarily.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So it comes down to like, is it causing suffering? And just because it's causing suffering, like I said, doesn't mean it isn't a spiritual thing, but we need to like also figure out how to help the person to not be in a state of suffering.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. So it's complex for sure. And
there's no blanket solution. What's right for one person isn't going to be right for everyone else. And I think that people really just need to look inside themselves and reach out to people that they trust and care about to be able to get that kind of help that they need.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I'm sure I've said it before, but what I always say when people, the first step in dealing with weird experiences is don't call them weird. And the reason I always say that is because it's like, there's no need to distance yourself from the experience by calling it weird. And when we say we're having weird experiences, what we're really saying is like, you'll probably think this is weird. Therefore I'm going to say it first.
Yep. That's about right.
so that's why I like to say, you know, mysterious or cool or, you know, unusual. We can start from that point at least. Anyway. Well, I love this. I hope that you will maybe come back and talk more stuff and tell me more stuff in the future. Do you think that this was so much fun today? Mm-hmm. And I love talking to you. And if you have more questions or more answers or more cool things you want to talk about, will you come back?
Sure.
Yay. Good. Really? For real?
Yes.
For real?
For real.
So you're just saying that?
It's not because you just put me on the spot at all. No, yeah. I will.
She said I did not put her on the spot.
Let the record reflect.
Let the record reflect that she defined her terms as. She defined the terms of spot putting.
I'm the debater here.
She defined her terms of spot putting as not what I did.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That is true. Okay.
And I got all. And how many did I do, producer?
None.
Zero ums. There were zero ums. Okay. Those of you playing the Tracy drinking game at home, I hope that you
find a doctor.
Find a doctor because you have developed a drinking problem. All right. All right. So we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for listening.